The regulator protests turned violent here on Monday, September 24, 1770, when hundreds arrived due to a court session starting. In those days, courts did more than they do today. They were effectively the county governments, and counties were much larger. According to one of the judges who attempts to hold court here on that date, in the streets and around the courthouse is a raucous mob waiting for the doors to open. Judge Richard Henderson writes, "After 11 o'clock, the court was opened, and immediately the house filled as close as one man could stand by another, some with clubs, others with whips and switches, few or none without some weapon. When the house became so crowded that no more could well get in, one of them, whose name I think is Fields, came forward and told me he had something to say before I proceeded to business." Henderson allows it, and Fields says he understands the judge does not intend to try anyone over the abuses the regulators oppose, but if he would, it might prevent some mischief. After about a half hour, the regulators leave the courthouse. However, they hang out all around you. When one lawyer tries to enter, they attack him with clubs and he runs to safety in a storehouse. They grab a number of men associated with the government or court and whip them, possibly using stocks behind the building. Clerk of Court Edmund Fanning, often cited as corrupt by the regulators, was a special target. A newspaper reported, "They seized him by the heels, dragged him down the steps, his head striking violently on every step, carried him to the door, and forcing him out, dragged him on the ground over stones and brickbats." Henderson said Fanning, "by a manly exertion, miraculously broke holt and fortunately jumped into a door that saved him from immediate dissolution. He escapes for the moment." Sometime around 3 or 4 in the afternoon, the regulators allow Henderson to adjourn court and escort him to his lodgings nearby. He escapes out the back around 10 that night. The next day, the regulators placed the corpse of an executed black in the judge's chair and held mock sessions of the court, leaving a profane set of court minutes. The following spring, when the court refuses to convene due to this event, a colonial army of part-time militia soldiers marches out under Royal Governor William Tryon to confront the regulators. On the way, it camps a half mile south or southeast of town, exact location unknown. On Saturday, May 11, 1771, the army of nearly 1,000 men with more than a dozen wagons and 8 small cannons marches up Churton Street to the right of the courthouse. They are heading for a camp by Hart's Mill, northwest of town on the Eno. But Tryon says they halted in the town for 6 hours to replace stolen horses for the wagons. He doesn't explain why this took the entire army, or 6 hours. The force defeats the regulators at the Battle of Alamance, south of modern Burlington, and then returns here by way of Bethabara in today's Winston-Salem. See our Tryon's March page for details. The army arrives back in Hillsborough on Thursday, June 13, marching from the north down Churton, turning this way at the nearby intersection, and continuing a mile east to the Few Plantation, which Tryon calls Back Creek Camp. This was owned by the father of the one regulator executed right after the battle, James Few. The land now is occupied by the Iron Mount Historic Home and Gardens. The horses and cattle are turned out on those grounds. Tryon notes the distance from Bethabara as 85 miles. This is remarkably accurate. Two online calculators say the distance to Bethania, 3 miles past Bethabara, is 79 or 80 miles by way of the interstates. Starting on Saturday, the remaining 15 regulator prisoners are put on trial in the courthouse in a court of oyer and terminer, equivalent to a county criminal court today. The trial resumes on Monday and ends on Tuesday with 12 men condemned to hang. Also during this period, per Tryon's orders, letters, and journal from the campaign, on Friday, June 14, from what he calls Hillsborough Camp, the men are ordered to march with spirit through town with a sprig of oak on the left side of their hats. He does not say why. It seems like this might be out of order and actually applied to their march to the camp. On Sunday, apparently shoes are wearing out because he orders the commissary or supply officer to deliver all the leather they have and the identification of all shoemakers in the army. The next day, Tryon asks for a head count of all the companies and their arms. The rest of this story will be told at a later stop. The clock in the tower today existed at the time, but in a church a block away we'll visit later. A clock restoration website claims this is the oldest continuous running tower clock in America, if you ignore two restorations 200 years apart. Most sources agree it was made sometime in the 1750s in England, given to Hillsborough by King George III, and installed in the church in 1766. So most, if not all, of the people described on this page would have checked the time on this clock. When Cornwallis was here, he had the royal standard, the flag representing the king, placed somewhere on the grounds in front of you and may have used the courthouse as his headquarters during the day. Please skip down to the historic homes section, follow its walking instructions, and click its audio clip.